lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Cover in the Corner podcast, episode 177. I am your host, Matt Lyons. On this week's episode, I'll have some meat rolls for you, some fun things that happened over the last week of baseball. Talk about Shane Bieber and his struggles, and if we're worried about it, and I guess just in general, the state of the rotation and how some of them are not as good as they were last year and the years before, and how much of a problem that is, and also how much of a problem Eddie Rosario is, because there's a running theme right now through Cleveland baseball that everybody's kind of struggling. They went on the trip to the East Coast. They're still on that trip, and we'll preview the last game in that little road trip against the Angels and the one after that against the Twins. Joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm great, Matt. Apparently they're on the East Coast now, not the West Coast.
Oh, you fool. I swear I said West Coast.
I'm gonna You're the bad podcaster.
Well, we've got to do the whole thing again now. We actually have to go back and re-record several podcasts now to fix it. So
you've blown it.
Whatever.
Everybody's bad, everyone.
I'm just like the rest of the Cleveland baseball team because bad. Everybody is terrible right now.
That's fair. I agree.
You know Shut it down. You know what's not terrible, Merritt?
What's that, bud?
Yeah. Meatball.
Meatballs, Merritt. They're not bad.
We've done it.
Meatballs, of course, is where we talk about fun little things that have happened. I call them fun things. They don't have to be fun things, Merritt. There's not always baseball's not
trash.
Always fun. Yeah. There's tears in baseball when you're
There's
watching.
There's no crying baseball. I learned that from Tom Hanks. And then he told me Wilson. And then he told me, I don't know, take the beach. And then he told me, what are some other things he would have told me? The burbs sure are weird. And then he told me, I'm a boy. That's from Big.
Thank you for clarifying that one. I thought that was Castaway for a minute there.
That was Wilson, alone. Of course.
I know. I thought you were doing a double reference there. You're telling Wilson, I'm a boy.
Double dip. Sure, I'm a boy.
What's your meatball this week, Matt?
Oh, I guess I'm going first again. Matt, I'm double dipping on this one. We're talking Harold Ramirez once again.
He was kind of a meatbally boy, so it works.
He's thinking
he deserves
around.
Two meatballs.
You know what, though? I think he deserves to start every single day. Did you know that I was looking at this? He has, since we've last chatted a week ago now, pretty sure we did a podcast last week, and if not, whatever.
Sure did.
He has 13 plate appearances, 12 at bats, because he did draw a walk demonstrating supreme plate discipline. Granted, it was an intentional walk, but still. He's only struck out twice, but more than that, he has 7 balls that he's put in play that are over 96 miles an hour, excuse me. I think this is going to continue to be a theme of him hitting the ball very, 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 very hard, including a 108.2 mile an hour line out against Justice Sheffield, a 104.9 mile an hour sharp ground ball in the middle, and his first home run of the year off Anthony, whatever, Miskiewicz, whatever. He hit a home run. So there you go. Top of the ninth over there in Seattle. I continue to like to watch what he does. Again, the plate discipline thing is the question, but you can't make any judgments whether it's in 13 plate appearances or 33 that he has on the year so far. He still is a league average hitter in that very short time, which is better than what we've seen out of outfielders predominantly over the last several years. Again, in these short sample sizes, his ground ball rate is very high, 60% of the time. His hard hit rate is very high, 53.6% of the time. Just like what I see so far. If you can get, as I was saying when I was talking about him last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever the hell that was, get the ball in the air a little bit more, and all of a sudden you might have a star on your hands, a free swinging star. But I'll take it. They got enough of those already. Why not a few more?
Yeah, I think even last year you said they found their new Yandy Diaz was your intro to it, which is very appropriate with the ground balls. And we've seen as he's gotten more that it's kind of that same thing. I do like that compared to like last year and the year before, his contact rate is like way up compared. Because, I mean, he's always going to be this guy that's swinging a ton. He's not striking out a lot now, which is nice. He's down to like, what, 12% somewhere in there. So he's not going to walk.
Yeah,
he's not going to strike out.
I mean, we're talking about how many strikeouts.
Well, yeah, but that's just a couple.
4 strikeouts in 32 at-bats. So, I mean, he could go on a tear. But what I'm saying is he's, again, in 13 plate appearances, he hit the ball very hard several times. And, I mean, that's what you want.
It's also kind of interesting that he wasn't scouted as having, like, this big power. He has a 40 raw power, according to Fangraphs. And, like, that's, I mean, that's average. But also, you look at, like, his stuff in the minors, and people are saying they knew he hit the ball hard, but it never equated to home runs, which also never equated to scouting power. I would assume that there's something correlated there. But as they're putting all these higher measurements in stadiums, I'm sure Cleveland has more stuff that we can't see about his hard hit rate in the minors. I'm sure the Marlins even had it, but they just didn't have room for him and had to, I think they non-tendered him before the season or DFA'd him, one of the two. But he'd be nice to stick around in Cleveland for a little bit.
I agree. Like, that's the thing. He's still very young. I mean, like, not very young. He's 26, but there could be something there. It seems like time and time again, like, we can look no further than, I believe he is on the Marlins now with Jesus Aguilar, who is, again, having a tremendous season. Why can't that happen for Cleveland, where someone else just cuts bait on someone and they come to a different place and be good? So that's what I'm seeing here so far. But again, we'll see how it goes. But even defensively, I'm not mad about what he does. So I'll take it.
Yeah. So mine this week is Jordan Luplow is, of course, having a very weird year by any stretch of the imagination. We've talked about how it's at this point, just let him try to swing against everything. He has exactly 100 plate appearances as of this recording going into the game on Monday. 6 home runs. He has a 122 WRC plus, which is good. You know, it's above average quite a bit. One of the best hitters on the team. 0.170 BAPIP, 183 average. 330 on base, 463 slugging. So it's a very weird line that he has. He's walked 17% of the time. So he has 15 hits altogether, 6 home runs, 5 doubles, which kind of creates that weird gap between BAPIP and your WRC plus, because obviously when you get a home run, it doesn't impact your BAPIP. So the more balls you have in play that go over the wall, it doesn't help it as compared to like hitting a double out there. But the few hits he have has been huge. So his average is nothing and his slugging is high. So I wanted to see how many other players signed to sort of match that, the BAPIP under 0.170. And I went with OPS plus because that's what Baseball Reference uses.
You can also use RBAP.
Nope, not doing that. They actually didn't have the play index. I was going to do that.
I know. They don't have that or the other one. They're ROBA. ROBA. Yeah.
But with that, his OPS plus is 118. So I went with that and 100 or more plate appearances. There's only 2 others who did it. I'm not even going to ask you to guess it because it'd be shooting in the dark here. But
Johnny Willingmeyer and, yeah.
It's actually Sam McDowell was one in 1974. No. Frank Thomas in 34 games in 2005 and Eddie Robinson.
That was a weird year.
Yeah, 88 games in 1955. So Frank Thomas still like 131 OPS plus that year. So he was still, I mean, it was just a few games. I'm assuming he was injured, but he was, of course, cranking home runs out of there. He was old at that point. But yeah, it's just a weird, weird thing for Jordan Luplow. I think it's also worth noting that having this huge split like this, only 3 people have done it. Only 2 have done it over, quote unquote, a full season, which is obviously they're both shortened season for them. I'm assuming they're both injured. Eddie Rosario or Eddie Robinson too. So I don't think this will continue forever, but it'd be really interesting if he did. It'd be weird if he did, but I think as he cools off I think his BAPIP will go up because he's going to get more singles and balls that are just not blasted out of the park once in a while. Because again, 11 of his 15 hits have been extra base hits. I don't think you can do that forever, but
maybe he's literally going full 3 true outcomes. He's only going to hit home runs, walk, or strike out.
And just walk 17% of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is awful. What's happening? Like, this is bad, but all right. I guess he's still valuable. That would really piss a lot of people off and make a lot of people question, is this really what we want baseball headed? I guess so. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it seems like it kind of is anyway, whether or not Jordan Luplow does it, that's where.
But this is we're going to push it to the fullest extent.
Oh, if he's literally only those 3?
Yeah.
Other than his 5 doubles now?
Like, if you ever watch, if you ever read about the, I think it's the G League team for the Rockets back when Morey was running the team. And literally, they did not allow their players to do anything except shoot 3s and take layups. Like, literally, that was it. And I can't imagine watching those games.
I mean, isn't that what basketball is getting to, too? I don't follow
it
that.
It is, but like, you're allowed to shoot a mid-range shot.
But they just said absolutely not.
Yeah, literally, you will be benched and possibly cut if you do this. And I was like, that's crazy, because that's all they wanted. He just wanted 3-and-D guys. And I get it. You know, it's efficiency and all that stuff. But
I think that's part of – because I feel like you can do that in basketball. You can mandate that. But in baseball, you can't tell someone only hit a home run or walk a strikeout. So it kind of – no matter how close we get, we're never going to get absolute true 3 outcome.
Only – we'll see about aluminum bats, won't we? That's right. And we'll have only dingers. Oh, yeah. Is it a home run that goes through the wall? That's the real question.
Do we know? I would assume once it hits the wall, it's in play. But what if it goes through the wall?
I guess that'd be a ground rule double because it'd be stuck, right? Because it wouldn't go over the barrier. But if it bounces over the barrier, then it's a ground rule double.
Okay, now we need to know what happens if it goes through the wall. If Franmil Reyes is out there hitting lasers and it goes straight through the wall under the yellow line, what is that?
I mean, it must be a ground rule, because like if it gets stuck in the ivy at Wrigley, I mean, it's basically going into the wall. theoretically, when you think about it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Because it goes in and then out of play and it's stuck. That's a boring answer, but I want to know.
Yeah, that's a terrible answer. I like the new answers where it's free for all. Run, run, run.
It's a triple minus two plus four is what that is when it goes through the wall. So you get, you go on a triple, take away two, add four, you get a run. So that's how it works.
You end up on first and add a run. That'd be interesting.
And also there's a ghost runner at second. Nobody knows why, but it's there. Oh, so,
but it's an actual ghost. Not like a fake runner. Like, there's an actual ghost that manifests. And we're going, this is unsettling. Have him steal third, I guess.
So another thing that is pretty unsettling, Shane Bieber, last four starts. He's gone from best in the league to just simply very good, which is still very good, obviously. His last four starts, 11 earned runs, 30 hits, 9 walks, 35 strikeouts. I mean, still 35 strikeouts, 30 innings. He's still pretty damn good. He doesn't have his command of his breaking stuff quite as much as last year, I don't think. I think a big thing to keep in mind with his struggles over the last four games is the fact that it's been 9 games altogether. Last year, he had 12. So he could easily go on another streak. He could go on 2 more streaks of what he had last year, and then nobody would care about the first 9. It's just because, as always, it's the streak that happens at the beginning, which is the biggest one. And then he had the 12 games last year, which, again, if that happened last year, he easily could have had a couple clunkers like he's had over the last 4 in a row now. At this point, I think it's too soon to be anything but coincidence. He has a 341 BABIP against, which is pitchers have a little bit more control over hitters, but it's not still something that he's total control over. So it's a little bit of luck on that side. Is it fly ball rates up a little bit, but nothing dramatic. I have two theories. One of them is one that you touched on before. I think he just needs to throw the damn cutter. I don't know why it's completely disappeared, but he's basically a 3-pitch pitcher now. What is it? Fastball, slider, curveball. I think he throws almost exclusively. Well, I mean, he has the other ones, but it's so rare that it's essentially a 3-pitch pitcher, because he's thrown a changeup. He's thrown the cutter a few times, like we've been on our little mini cutter watch. But as far as what he actually throws a majority of the time compared to the year before, I'm just buying time until the pitch mix opens on Baseball Savant. And of course,
oh, let me open it up. I already had it open. I could have just saved you all this horrible time.
You know, it's just those three. So it's fastball, curveball, slider are the vast majority. Changeup a little under 4%, cutter 2.3%. So it's barely at all. There's not like a huge shift in the break of any of his pitches, so nothing looks totally different. It's just that cutter is missing right down the middle. It's one that he's it differentiated between that and his slider. It gave him something else to use. And then of course the changeup, he doesn't use it at all. Last year it was 8% of the time. This year it's, like I said, 4% half of that. Yeah. So that's one of the things I think, is that he just needs these other pitches instead of just being a 3-pitcher guy. I don't think it's related to like Roberto Perez being out and Austin Hedges being in. This is, if we can see it this easily, I'm sure Cleveland, with all the people they have pouring over numbers, see that he's only throwing these 3 pitches, and they can say, hey, maybe you should, you know, add a couple of these in. But my second theory is that the stupid 8-run, 8 strikeout streak was, they'll never say it, obviously, because it's a lame thing to chase. But the fact that he was put in so many times, multiple times over his last 4 games, where he was over 100 pitches and he came back out with 7 strikeouts or 6, where it was clear like he was close to extending that streak, and then he did. I don't know if that's like in the back of his head somewhere.
8? Who cares about 8? 8 what?
It's, just, like, it's one of those, like, I remember always watching SportsCenter as a kid, and the ridiculous, like the first batter on a Tuesday with the last name that started with a D hit 3 home runs, like that kind of thing. It's just a random streak that doesn't mean anything. And it felt like, this could just be a narrative thing after the fact, but it felt like it was either he was pushing for it or Francona was putting him in situations to keep getting it. And I think that if that is the case, maybe there'll be something that's different now. I think also the fact that he's played different teams now, like you can't just, not that last year was all a mirage because he played the AL Central, but he's not going to be able to glide through every team like he can the Royals and Tigers. I think there is a legitimate case that he has to like battle once in a while, and I think he will. And I think he's basically, I just think he's fine compared to last 4 games. I think he'll be okay going forward.
Yeah, battle against the teams like the mighty Seattle Mariners.
You know, that team with the dreaded, you know, the big offense they got there.
I think there might be some, and this is just, I don't know, this is based on just an idea that's popped in my head. There might be something to the fact that it's Hedges catching now, because Perez has a reputation on the team as being the leader, you know, as being a leader on the field and that sort of a thing. And he's been there the entire time Bieber's been there. So maybe Bieber just trusted him more. And so this, rather than it being Perez calling the game, it's now Bieber and Hedges calling the game together, if that makes sense. So like Bieber's just kind of going with what he thinks feels best to him, whereas maybe sometimes Perez would be like, no, you should throw this pitch instead because he's looking over here. I can tell by the way he's standing next to me or whatever. You know, he also, like, the catchers also do a lot of work as far as scouting and things like that. But it could be that. But I mean, to your point, you know, I mentioned, this is something I mentioned about Plezak on the Slack channel the other day. Like, he throws a curveball that's not very good, but in the net with everything else that he throws, it looks better and makes everything else better. So his not throwing a changeup or throwing his cutter or whatever makes everything worse because, like you said, he's just much more predictable now. And I mean, we talk a lot about how his curveball and slider are so dirty, but they kind of blur into each other sometimes. Like when they're not working perfectly, they're kind of the same pitch, just with a slightly different break, it seems like. And his fastball's never been all that good anyway. So, like you said, it just, what made him valuable was obviously location, but also his repertoire. And him not having that anymore makes him a much more unvaluable pitcher, I suppose, which is, you know, frustrating. One would hope that he starts plowing other pitches in there and making adjustments and seeing the fact that he has an ERA over of like,
I mean, it's like 3.21. It's still amazing, but
but just in the last three games, he's got an ERA at where the hell do they put ERA on this? 4.15.
That's not great.
And guys are hitting 324, 407, 521 against him. Again, that's a bad at 467 over the last few games, so he's been unlucky, but. Pitchers get unlucky, obviously. It's not like he's been facing dominant offensive teams. He did only give up, what, two runs against the Cubs, but he gave up, what, four and then three and only four and two-thirds innings against Seattle. He's been bad all year, really. But like you said, it seems like he was chasing that weird streak in some way or other. And, like, it's something to strike out 12, 12, 11, 13 in your first four starts. But then it's, like, nine. Like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you know, the double-digit streak was kind of cool when he had it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a solid thing. But, after like, I even saw after this one was snapped, they were saying, like, now he's the second longest with this many seven strikeout games. Like,
so who gives a shit? What's seven strikeouts? Like, come on. Goddamn.
Got a lucky strikeout game.
Yeah, he also, like, I think the more uncharacteristic thing is, like, the four walks against Seattle. That's not what you expect out of him at all, which is just... It's weird to say fatigue this early in the season, but he has thrown more innings than anyone else, too. And like he's been going, like you said before, he's been going deep a lot. 119 pitches on April 24th, 113 on the 13th. Like, he's only got one game under 100 pitches this year.
Yeah, didn't he throw 120 in another one, too?
Threw 121 on May 11th. Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, why? Like, that was a game specific. There was one game here where I couldn't figure out why the hell they sent him back out. I think it might have been the Cubs one, actually, because it just seemed like they were up a decent amount. And how often have we talked about their bullpen? Like, what are we doing here? Like, they sent him out, and then they had to go to the bullpen in that inning anyway. So they didn't give whoever it was a clean inning. Like, the whole point of having all these guys. And so they're just like, we don't want to do that. We want to keep them fresh for some reason or other. So.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I think it was the Cubs. It was a game where they, like, battled back, but they got enough of a lead, and it didn't make sense to bring him back. But apparently Terry Francona has said if they fought back, he'd talk him back in. But I don't know if it is like Bieber talking his way back in the game, which again, that's not good either on Terry Francona. That goes back to like the bunting thing with Eddie Rosario. He had an awful bunt on Sunday. And if that's just him doing it, that falls back on Terry Francona for not stopping that, not stopping from Shane Bieber from going out with 103 pitches already on his arm.
Like, that's the much more, that second one is the much more onerous one. Like that's literally, you just tell him no. Like obviously if a guy's going to bunt, you can tell him to stop doing it. You can still do it though. You can't like drag him by his ear out of the batter's box.
Can you though?
Well, I don't know. I've never actually read the CBA. It could be actually in there. And there's just no one really knows. It's just something from the, you know, they just forgot to erase the last page or something. It's on the back, you know, like an old piece of paper they used.
Or what if Tito went up acting like he was yelling at the ump, but was looking right at Eddie Rosario as he was doing it and yelling things at him? Or looking at the ump, but yelling at Eddie Rosario.
Eddie, goddamn.
Joe West is just like, I don't know. What are you doing? It's not me.
I can't throw him out because he's not swearing at me. So I don't know. All right. But like you said, it's not terrifying. He's still striking a bunch of guys out. He's still good.
Yeah, now he's just a very, very good pitcher instead of the best pitcher ever. Like, I don't know that I ever thought he was going to be that forever, like a 1.63 ERA. I always thought at least a little bit of it was who he faced, but I think he can be better than what he's been over the last four games, obviously, even better than what he's been over this year. Just like you said, the walks are the biggest thing, but even last year they were up a little bit. He was just striking out enough to compensate for it and was, like, stranding 90% of the base runners, which maybe that won't stick forever. But
Well, I think part of it, too, is he's just... when people make contact, I mean, this has always been a problem of his. they hit it very hard. It's just the only pitch they really make contact on is his fastball. And so when the only pitches you're throwing are your fastball, which is straight as an arrow, or a curveball, which breaks an absurd amount, or a slider, which breaks an absurd amount, and if you can't throw those for strikes consistently, that's where the cutter, as you mentioned before, that's where the cutter kind of comes in, right? It's a little kind of finesse on the fastball, tricks the eyes of the batter to thinking that it's something else before, and then it's just in the strike zone. Because at the end of the day, you need pitches you can throw for strikes in addition to ones that you can throw for a strikeout. He can get ahead all he wants, but it seems like that's been happening a lot this year, where he gets ahead and then falls behind because he just kind of keeps on getting guys to chase, or trying to get guys to chase. I think that's something we talked about earlier, where he was trying to, even though he said he was going to try and pitch to contact more, but he's also like pitching out of the zone a lot and like trying to get guys to swing and miss on obviously pitches they're not going to swing and miss it anymore. But
yeah, and it's as far as his fastball too, like he's, it's kind of interesting. Like last year he went up to 94.1. That was kind of a big deal that he was throwing hard. Now he's back down to basically exactly what he was in 2019. I don't know if that's anything, but he's also, I mean, he's still better than he was in 2019 because he's got, his stuff works better, but his velocity's back down. I don't know if that's just because he had the more time off and he was more rested going into last year than this year or something like that. I don't know, but his velocity's back down. But again, he doesn't use this. He's not like Gerrit Cole, who relies on a 99-mile-per-hour fastball. It's just kind of another pitch he has to set everything else up. So I don't
Yeah, exactly. It's what he uses to get strike one. And then, yeah, that's just why he needs the other pitches to work. Like, he can't be a 2 and 3 pitch pitcher. I'm like, Cole, it sounds derisive, but it's just because Cole can do that because everything is frightening.
Because you're scared every time a ball comes at you. You don't know
what to do. Oh, God, no. Yeah, so, you know, the thing with Bieber is he just bends time and space around most of his pitches, and he needs to throw those more often. And I don't know, again, I wonder if some of it does come back to Hedges too, because he just doesn't feel confident enough in telling Bieber what to do. But I don't want to, you know, say Hedges can't. He's a veteran, you know, catcher at this point. It's about knowing your guy as well. It's why people worry about it happening when you lose a pitcher.
I don't know. Have you seen Shane Bieber strut on the mound? I would not challenge that man. He looks scary after he strikes the guy out and he's just walking around the mound like that. He's terrifying.
Yeah, Justin Perez is cool as hell. Like, come on. Like,
yeah, Austin Hedges. Yeah, although Austin Hedges has the murder eyes. If he looks you straight in the eyes and tells you to throw a curveball, you're going to throw a curveball. So have you seen his eyes behind the plate when he's throwing down a sign? It's amazing.
He seems so kind, though.
Austin Hedges?
Yeah. He's
like a nice, no, he does not.
Oh, God. His other photo is horrifying. But
there's nothing kind about Austin Hedges' eyes.
On Baseball Reference, he's got a nice smile. And, you know.
If you Google Austin Hedges, the first image.
I will never do this.
He's just staring into your soul. That's just,
oh,
the way,
God damn. He has a but, you know, they're not dead eyes, though. Like,
no,
like,
they're very lifeful eyes. That's the problem. Yeah, it's the opposite.
I'm actually coming for you.
I see you.
Charles Manson eyes. I'm coming for you, baby.
In my last, one weird thing I know about Bieber, this, again, it could be a small sample thing because he's only thrown 22 of them, but 19 of his cutters have been against lefties, which I don't know if that's just a random thing or if there's a reason he's only using them. Because last year he threw them more to righties than lefties, which I know typically a cutter.
It makes more sense to throw to, I mean.
Right, because you want it to go, it cuts to.
It runs away from a righty and runs into a lefty. For,
yeah. Yeah, so you want to throw them to more righties because it gets away from them. You can throw it on the outside of the owner, try to throw a front door on their hands, but he's used it only against lefties, which is weird. And against righties, there was one, it was a homer. It was a terrible cutter. It was right over the heart to Hunter Dozier. Luis Robert took one for a ball on a 2-1 count. And Kyle Higashioka, who grounded out on one, but it's weird. He also tends to use it on pitchers or batters he didn't see in 2020. Because I just looked through all the ones that he threw it. Like, he didn't use it a ton against the Royals and all them, but like Carlos Santana, he's used it against a bunch, who obviously hasn't seen him. I don't know if he just knew that Carlos Santana couldn't handle cutters, but he threw a bunch to him. So just kind of a weird thing that he's, first of all, not using a ton of cutters, and second of all, when he does, it's only against lefties, which is kind of the reverse of what you would think you would do with him. But
now I'm looking at how he often throws changeups. I'm back on the changeup tip now.
I mean, almost never this year. It's, what is it? Like, 38 changeups.
His name is as a batter instead of a.
How many changeups has Shane Bieber seen?
He's seen one, actually.
Well, there you go.
From Wade Miley. I don't know what happened in that game, but he's thrown 38 changeups.
Well, there you go.
Jared Kelenic took one for a ball. Donovan Walton took one for a ball. Andrew Benintendi, Super Benintendi, hit one into for a sharp single. Benintendi did it again. Benintendi did it again. Wait a minute.
Now, see, again, these are all guys he didn't see last year.
That's all the same. Was in Boston. He just threw a shitload of changeups to Andrew Benintendi.
I mean, that's kind of a scouting report thing, but like, Kelnick, if he didn't see it before, obviously. I don't know if there's something to the fact that it's newer players. Like we even said early on, they might be using this as a way, like he'll bring the cutter out later on when people have seen his other pitches more. But who knows? I think it'll be fine in general. But I don't think he's quite to the level he was last year, and he might not ever get back there again just because he was absolutely insane. But I think he just needs to throw more damn pitches. But so this offseason, Cleveland, they made, I don't know if you know if you noticed, Mayor, but all the headlines were on Cleveland this year. They made a splash of a signing. Eddie Rosario, a whole $8 million, which is, what is the math on that? That's a lot of their payroll. This went to this one man, Eddie Rosario, who plays the outfield. He's non-tendered by the Twins. He was obviously their big splash of the offseason. He is currently slashing 206, 266, 328 for a 65 WRC+. Plus. He has 3 home runs, but I mean, it doesn't matter when everything else is that bad.
What's his R bat, though?
God damn it. Nobody cares what his R bat is. It's probably relatively the same as WRC+.
Plus. I'm checking his R bat right now.
There you go. I'm glad we did that. Now we have a whole different view of him. Thank you, Baseball Reference, for making your own WRC+. Plus. We really need that. Yeah, his batting profile, he's still hitting the ball hard. His launch angle it's lower than last year, but he's had the same, he's at 14.1. He's had that same angle before and has worked just fine. His BABIP is a little low at 233, but nothing that should have him at 65 WRC+. Plus. The only real thing I can see is that he's being a little less aggressive with Cleveland. He's swinging outside 38% of the time, making contact less 68.3% of the time. So, I mean, his calling card has always been that he'll swing at goddamn everything, and occasionally he'll hit it, but he's just not swinging quite as much. And this year, fastballs are absolutely destroying him. Baseball has run values based on each pitch, and his is -5, which is among the worst in baseball against any kind of fastball you see. Like, even Fangraphs, which splits out the values. It's cutters, four seamers, two seamers, whatever. He just can't seem to catch up to anything this year. Between the lack of aggressiveness that he usually has and just not being able to catch up to that stuff, I think it's mostly that. He's seen like 153 four seamers. He's whiffed 24% of the time on those, by far the most of any pitch, and he's slugging 156 off of four seamers. So that's not great. It's when your calling card is being aggressive and swinging at things and being a streaky hitter who can occasionally run into a bunch of things, I don't know how he does that if he just can't catch up to a fastball. Like, I don't know if we don't really have a bat speed measurement anywhere, but I'd be interested to know if that's just partially what it is. Like, if he's just slower on everything, he is kind of pulling the ball, or not pulling, but going the other way a little bit. No, I guess he is pulling the ball more than ever, but so I don't know. It doesn't look like he's extremely late on everything. He just can't catch up to fastball and hit it with any kind of authority, which he used to do at least a little bit. It's just, you look at like his Baseball Savant page and all of his stuff is down. He's never been a terribly hard hitter, but he's always hit enough where, combined with the fact that he could make contact everywhere, he was able to sustain it and crush Cleveland pitching. But now apparently he doesn't have that whipping boy of his. And in Cleveland, he's not up to what he used to be. So now Cleveland has sunk $8 million into what is, I mean, essentially Jake Bowers plus a little bit more, who can play left field.
I read somewhere that this is during the off season. This is just something you have to expect from Eddie Rosario. The ebbs and the flows will be wonderful. The ebbs will be miserable. And it's just obviously, yeah, it's all bad. You know, what, his home run rate's in the toilet. His strikeout rate's the highest it's ever been since 2017. Yes, walk rate is fine. I mean, for him, whatever, it's above his career average. But maybe, yeah. There's, you know, again, they mess with the ball, and so that could be having something to do with it, because it's not going as far, and it's also spinning more, so maybe it's just he's not being able to square fastballs as well anymore because they're moving more. I don't know. It's just one of those things where he just stinks right now because, like you said, he's going to be a very pitcher, or hitter rather, who is very much streaky. He's just going to be shitty sometimes, and that's the way it's going to be, and it sucks that that's the way it has to be, but his isolated slugging is the lowest of his career at 122. The MLB average even this year is 166. So he's just being very below average, Matthew. Very, very, very below. And in every way, too. Hard hit rate, bad. I think that's the scariest one, too. Is not only is he not like catching up the fastball, when he hits the ball, he's not hitting it very hard at all. And that's something he's always been able to do, because he does have, you know, ankles to neck range on his contact, and he's always able to do something with it. But he's not doing it anymore, and it's hard to hitting is just so hard to tell because there's so many different variables to it. And now they've changed the ball again. Like, it's like that's another fun variable to try and figure out. He's 29, so it's not like he's like old now. But hitting is hard, and he obviously has flaws. So maybe it took a little while for him to figure them out. He needs to respond to the responses, I suppose.
Yeah, and Chris Davies, another writer on Covering the Corner, he had posted like the rolling woba of a bunch of batters. And like Eddie Rosario, he's obviously streaky, so his you have these highs where they're like the rolling average over 15 games is like 500 is his woba, which is like a basically a better version of OPS, and it drops down to like 200. So it's ridiculous like how much he swings. And usually when he's this low, which is around like 200, 250, by now, with how long he's been down, a couple weeks, like he's usually back up on the upside of his streaks, but now he's just kind of hanging around like the 250, 300 range, which seems not great. I mean, I know he's a streaky hitter, but it also like seems to point to something might be wrong with him longer than just his normal streakiness. So,
well, if you go to the Baseball Savant page too, they have their rolling expected WOBA, and he does seem to be arcing back up in the right direction, both in the past 100 and past 50 plate appearances. So maybe he is just back on the way up. It just took a little bit longer because, I don't know, new town, hasn't seen these teams in a while, longer travel, right? Things are a little bit different for him. Just took him a second to figure it out. So, again, we're still only talking about 145 plate appearances, which is a good number. You know, it's definitely a time to start making judgments, but he could definitely also go and hit 450 for the next 2 weeks. And then we go, well, there we go. All right, he's good again. And then he'll just, you know, fall back into a toilet sometime before the All-Star break and either be a problem or be not a problem. So it's nice to know that, at the very least, the fortunes of Cleveland do not depend on his bat, because as evidenced by him being very bad over the last 10 or 12 games and then being very good over those that same stretch, I'm not going to horribly worked up about it, I guess.
Yeah, he's just kind of flown under the radar with being how average he's been, I guess, because we assume he's going to come back, so we just kind of put him in the corner and just say work it out yourself. And
well, that and also back. Like just there's so many other players we're used to being bad that we get to complain about first.
Yeah. We need to get to Jake Bowers and Yu Chang and everybody else before we get to Eddie Rosario, because we know he'll come back, but the other guys we're not quite sure if they can ever be anything. But just kind of the way it is. Yeah, we'll find out over
find out next time.
Here on Covering
the Corner. I will say, yeah, he has a couple things going for him that I think we could see him coming back, and they're all external factors. Well, that's an internal factor, even though it's outside of his face. He gets to face Angels pitching, and then he gets to face the Tigers, and also he gets to face the Twins. So
depleted Twins team who's going to be coming off of – who's not going to have any bullpen after a doubleheader against
the – exactly. So it's there's some positivity there, at least in terms of seeing him bounce back a little bit over the next. Let's circle back on this next week. Let's make a note to have the conversation around him next week, because if he doesn't do anything over the next what, 7 days or whatever, then it's a problem, because he's facing some of the worst pitching in all of baseball over the next couple of days. And the Twins aren't like that bad, but they're also not that good either.
The Twins are also just like, everybody's down. Like Maeda is not the same. Hap isn't great. And then Pineda is Michael Pineda. So, I mean, yeah, if next week, if Cleveland's offense is still like scoring three or less runs a game after that, I think then we have, I don't think it's time to like slam the alarm button, but I'm going to poke it a little bit and
yeah, start you're kind of good.
Considering. Start I'm flipping that little cover up going, on it. Yeah.
Hello there, old friend. What are you doing over here?
I think so, the fact that the Twins are such a dumpster fire kind of calms the emergency button. Like if they were what they should be and Cleveland was in third in the division and playing the way they are, I think they'd be maybe a little more concerned, but they're not. So, and also just early in general. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's kind of hard to worry too much.
Like, and he's bad. He had a decent stretch earlier in the season. He's just very bad right now. And other guys are also very bad right now. And some of them are young and will stay being bad. Some will get better. Although it's nice to see guys like Franmil Reyes, who's on a downswing right now. His OPS is still what, like, his OPS plus is still like 125 or something like that.
But what's his RBAT, man? I don't care.
I was just going to check right now. So I was curious, what is his RBAT right now? I believe it's 129. Oh, 129. Yeah, it's MLB average, as we know, when it comes to RBAT plus is exactly 100.
Ooh, that's interesting. I can't believe they did that. Wow.
Yeah, his his ROBA is 364. So.
Oh, there you go. We need to have like a CTC plus where we were talking in the Slack about having a stat that's the win probability over whatever happened with bunting, which is maybe like that'll be the official Covering the Corner stat.
We need a math man to do this. The math man prophecies.
There you go. So yeah, over the next week, I mean, by the time you listen to this podcast, they've already have played one game on Monday, which is the Hengis Sandoval matchup. But Cleveland will be playing the Angels and the Twins. And before we were doing the podcast, we spent a good, I don't know, half a minute, 45 seconds trying to figure out what the hell was going on, because both Cleveland and the Angels play the Twins next, which seemed really weird. But then we realized that the Indians have to go home. They get an off day on Thursday, and then the Twins, they have to play a doubleheader against the Angels. So, I mean, this is all very good news for Cleveland, because they play the Angels. It's three more late games, which kind of sucks, but then they get their off day. They can rest and relax. Meanwhile, the Twins, they have to fly to Los Angeles, play out there, do that crazy
shenanigans. Anaheim,
whatever. They're the Angels of Los Angeles, Anaheim, California conglomerate.
That's like saying Baltimore is Washington, D.C.
It's the same thing. It all blends together. And then they fly back to Cleveland, where they play the Indians then. So, I mean, this is going to be an exhausted Twins team, and then the Angels are just bad. So this is kind of a good opportunity, like we said with Eddie Rosario, to just kind of recover, because Patrick Sandoval is just a lefty who's whatever. Haney's not great. I mean, Shohei Ohtani is great. He's going to be fun to watch. I might be actively rooting against my own team just to watch him be good, because I don't know when I get to watch him again play Cleveland. So I just love Shohei Ohtani, and I don't know how good he's going to be. But that'll be a good one. And then, of course, the Twins. I mean, Kenta Maeda just not himself this year. His cutter doesn't have – he doesn't – like Shane Bieber, he stopped using the cutter. He still has that good gap between his slider and split finger. So it's just hard to really tell what's wrong with him. He's just not striking people out this year.
I wonder if cutter use is down across baseball. Now I'm wondering about it.
Like, if it's just like a league-wide thing. But
like, they're just – they can't throw it. Maybe the change to the ball has made throwing a cutter harder. I'm not saying –
I can't imagine that did it, but –
I mean,
they wouldn't know before anyway, would they?
Well, I mean, maybe they just realized. You'd figure it out during spring training, wouldn't you? You'd be like, this sucks. We can't do any of this. This is piss.
And nobody told Brian Shaw, and he's just out there slinging them.
Oh, he's just like, I don't care. My hand is big and weird.
Have you seen my beard? Like, I give a shit. I'll throw a cut.
See, he's sneaky. He has a bunch of grease in his beard. He's just very slippery.
There you go. He's a slippery boy.
Let's see here. Cutter use is it's second highest in the last 10 years. Anyway, well, all right.
But in these two very specific pitchers, Kenta Maeda is down. And then Bieber pitches the next game against J Happ, which, I mean, he should be able to beat J Happ, I would hope. But
J Happ's a trickster, though, because he's left-handed and not very good. So we know he's gonna do well against Cleveland. That's the ancient rule of baseball. The middling lefty is here once again.
And the Angels, of course, lost their big slugger. Albert Pujols is now with the Dodgers. It's a very sad loss for them. But
I can't believe they let him go. I mean, that's a $250 million man right there. How'd you just let him go like that? When you pay people a lot of money, they're automatically good, right? Mike Trout is very good.
Oh, yeah, that's the one case where it works. But yeah, that of course, lets them use Jared Walsh, which, I mean, we'll see him on Monday, I'm sure, and on Tuesday and Wednesday. I wrote about him in the preview. I think he's interesting, the fact that he seems like a guy who could, I mean, like, be Franmil Reyes eventually, who has a bunch of power and also hits the ball the other way. Right now, he's just a guy who slap hits and occasionally runs into one, because he can beat the piss out of the ball, but he just swings at everything and doesn't really wait for his wheelhouse. So I think eventually he's going to, like, morph into Franmil Reyes, which will be fun for them and bad for everybody else. But he's a really interesting prospect for the Angels, and now they actually get to use him now that Albert Pujols is gone. And then, of course, Shohei Ohtani.
He's 27 years old, though. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's a late bloomer. But, I mean, if you get him for a couple of years, then there you go. Yeah.
Where's that other fat, the Joe something?
West?
Joe. No, Joe. Yeah. Not Joe West, you big jerk. Joe Adell.
Oh, there you go.
Joe Adell.
Oh, he's terrible now. He's
bad again?
I think he just struck out like four times. I was watching Eric Longenhagen's prospect notes, and I mean, even he just sort of like skimmed over the fact that Joe Adell is there. Like, he has just disappeared off everything. Because I think he came up last year, right? And he was bad. And then he went back down.
He wasn't hitting last year. Was
I guess he's fine now in the minors. He's, well, maybe not. But he's hit a couple homers, and that's about it. He's basically like Jordan Luplo. Struck out 40% of the time so far. And I mean, that's over 47 plate appearances. But
yeah, whatever.
I mean, I think we care about 40% strikeouts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do we, though? I don't know. That's a good question. 40% isn't 50%. So
that's true. It's not even 60%. It's 30% less than 70.
I'm really excited to watch the Angels. I watched them a decent amount on the weekend because it's one of the few games that's still on after I've been watching other baseball games. So, I mean, who doesn't want to watch Mike Trout, though? And obviously, Tony Two Bags, everyone's favorite player.
I always get suckered into watching them, and I always regret it every time because they're so bad.
I mean, it's like, I want to watch three at bats every. like, how far are we from Trout? Okay, let's see. Well, I'm glad they're putting the number next to his bat. I'm like, I don't. You hit just enough to you're like, okay, well, I don't have to watch for 20 minutes. Perfect.
It's like the modern equivalent of watching the TV Guide channel where you're just waiting for Mike Trout to come back around and you miss it. You're like, damn it.
Well, but now we have two chances at Shohei Ohtani as well. Yeah, and Jared Walsh and Tony Twobags. So, you know.
There is actually just so many options on offense. It baffles me how bad they could be. Because even Justin Upton, when he's not, I guess he is probably terrible now, but I remember at one point when he was super good and that was
fun.
He was
very good. He was an absolute fucking.
I believe he was getting Ken Griffey Jr. comps at one point as a prospect. And that
he was a wrecking ball out there. Yeah, you had a year there. And I mean, you know what? He's only had an OPS over 900 twice. And one of those was a partial season with Detroit. Wow, really? You know, I just have this memory of him being way better than he ever actually was.
I remember the hype from earlier when he was with the Dodgers, but that's it. So I'm pretty much on the same boat that I remember him being way better than he actually has been.
With the Dodgers. Do you mean the Diamondbacks?
Or Diamondbacks, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's because he had
that one super good season where did he win MVP or he was close, like 2011, something like that.
He came fourth in MVP voting. Yeah, he hit 289, 369, 529, 31 ding-dongs, 88 RBIs. 21 stolen bases and 9 caughts. I mean, that's not even that good. The thing is, it's like, I think him and his brother were just like, the amount of like potential between him and BJ Upton were like, these guys could be anything. And they weren't bad. They were pretty good players, but they never like got past a certain level, I guess, for being a corner plateaued, outfielder. Right?
Plateaued, right? Whatever.
Yeah, like pretty hard. You know, it's like when you have a guy who's 23 putting up that line, basically, right? 141 OPS plus, 31 dingers. You're like, this guy is going to be just unspeakable. And then that's the best season he's had. Like, ever since then, it's been OPSs in the mid-800s, which, again, not terrible, but nothing ever frightful until he had that one year in Detroit when they stunk, but he was great. And it was, you know, interesting.
Yeah. It'll be interesting even watching him now. And even there, I mean, the Angels are just, they're interesting, but so bad. And their pitching staff is just a disaster. Other than Shohei Ohtani, like even Dylan Bundy, who was good last year, he's terrible this year. Jose Quintana, remember him when he was good?
Yeah, dude, he was awesome when he was on the White Sox.
Yeah, he went to the Cubs and he was still okay. And then now he's just off one. They're like the pitching equivalent of what happens to Cleveland. Everybody just comes there. Or like the pitching equivalent of Cleveland batters where they go and then just they. It's a graveyard in the rotation.
Moreno's, I don't know. Art Moreno, you think he's a good owner, but actually he's a shitty owner because he's just like, sign more guys. I don't know. It's a work. And then it's like, oh, now we have to pay him. We're going to keep him until he falls apart. And you're like, well, great. This is going to be very bad because there's no saving this rotation either. Like, it's chock full of garbage and Shohei Ohtani. And it's just, Andrew Heaney was, I remember him being good. Maybe yeah, I'm just I mean, he's not remembering things correctly.
Yeah, you're
maybe
definitely not remembering him. Work. There was one year where he was okay, and then he was bad the rest. I don't know if you're...
Dylan Bundy had that one good year in 2020, and he had a nice stretch there with Baltimore in 2019, I think. What a stinky... What an ebb and flow team right here. Stars and Scrubs, whoever there was, when it sucked. I remember I picked them to win the World Series this year.
Okay, really? Based on what?
Mike Trout.
Oh, there you go. Can't go wrong there.
Come on, Mike Trout, Tony Twobags, Shohei Ohtani, they got it all. I love Andy Rendon. I can't quit that dude. I'm so sad he left DC.
I wonder if Ohtani feels duped going to... Because, I mean, he's obviously the biggest marketable superstar internationally, considering the market they have overseas. Like, he comes over and thinks he's going to play with the best player in baseball, who's going to take him to all these great things, and then, oh yeah, the rest of the Angels exist, and you're still stuck here.
Yeah, but like, you know, low pressure. It's a cool place to play, I guess. The weather's nice. I don't know, you know, whatever. It depends on his goals. It depends on his eventual goals as a person. And I think right now he's just being cool, so that's pretty positive. And you know what?
He's nailed that.
They keep on making efforts, and I think that's what it is. It's just their shitty efforts is all. It's the problem. Like, they sign Anthony Rendon, and then everything else is still bad. David Fletcher, they keep on playing him leadoff. I still look at that one. They should just have Mike Trout leadoff. Like, that's it. Just do it. His on-base percentage is .462, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, like, Fletcher's a high on-base guy for normal humans, but obviously Mike Trout's a little high. I guess you want to put your...
.271, though. Like,
well, this year he's bad, but I mean, I wouldn't make changes over that.
2 years, a year and a half, 200 games worth of having a 100 OPS plus.
What's his on-bat, man?
I'll tell you, actually, his armband over the last 2 years. Let's see if it does this for me. It does not work on that right now.
Forget that stat then. Worse.
Well, in 2019, it was 96. Ooh. And in 2020, it was 116. This year, it is 40. 4-0, baby.
Ooh, that's not good. Thank you, Baseball Reference, for that.
I love
They're always lower plus. Than WRC Plus. Is it, do you actually know the difference, or just use it because it's weird and a new thing?
Because I don't pay for Fangraphs, and I do pay for Baseball Reference, and I like their interface more.
So this is the new stat that works better.
Batting runs is computed by WAR, but indexed to the environment the player batted in, where 100 is league average. So, you know,
whatever. I mean, it's the exact same thing, but they're using different inputs somewhere along the way.
Yeah, exactly. And their WAR is different too. I mean, because of defensive reasons, but there's some other math shit in there. I don't know. Whatever.
Just some math shit that's in there. But yeah, I think that'll. We grabbed just about everything. We got Bieber, Eddie Rosario, yep. Mm-hmm. Baseball games. They're going.
Twins can kiss my ass.
they're losing again right now. I don't know if they're going to come back between now and the end of the night, but they're so bad. The problem now is they're losing to the White Sox. Like, we should be rooting for the Twins, but I guess where we are at this point, where we want other teams to help us to catch up to the White Sox, which this is like last year where we were chasing the Twins, but we're not 15 games behind. This is more doable. It's more fun. The Twins are last in the division, and the White Sox are 2.5 of up from Cleveland. So.
And I still say that they're a flawed team, the White Sox. I definitely think they're going to have a coming back to earth moment at some point.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they had the highest run differential in baseball. Wow, in baseball, yeah.
Dude, well, yeah, I know. But that gets buoyed by the fact that they threw a no-hitter against a shitty team.
Which team was that?
I don't know. I gotta go.
Do you happen to know which one that is? But yeah, I think they're going to come back down to earth. There's this good forever, but I just hope they catch them. But on that note, Merritt. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Find us at coveringthecorner.com.
Stitcher,
that's another one. Coveringthecorner.com, Cover the Corner on Twitter. You find me on Twitter, Matt RLY, Merritt at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch, but with lunch. Merritt.
Just as criminal, too.
Talk to you next week.